All right, everyone, welcome back to the Roto Experts Fantasy Football Show. I am Davis Maddock, and I brought in a legend, someone who I've been listening to on fantasy football podcasts for, I mean, at this point, I think it's actually been a decade. Sigmund Bloom, my friend, how are you doing on this morning?
My friend, indeed, and it's been too long, and time just passes, and the pages turn, but I'm excited that I get a chance to talk to you, whether we're recording on my show or your show or just talking, because this is an exciting time to be doing what we're doing. Everybody's juices are flowing, the adrenaline after the draft, and this rookie class, Davis, you've been doing this for a long time now. Now, I can even say to you, you're kind of a gray beard when it comes to what you've seen and how much has changed, even in the 5 or 6 years since you were first on my show, or was it 6 or 7 or 8? I don't even know. The point is, the league is changing. And this draft shows that in a lot of ways. And what it's created that's fun is a wide divergence of opinions, bigger than any rookie draft I can remember, which means you should be able to get your guys. Even if you disagree with me or disagree with Davis or disagree with your favorite rookie rankings, that's a good sign because that means you're going to be able to put your money where your mouth is.
Absolutely. I the first rookie class that I sat down and ranked, and I had opinions on everyone and, you know, thought about things before the draft and after the draft, was the 2014 class, which at this point is now legendary, all those wide receivers from that class. And I can say in all my years doing this, this is probably the least consensus, you know, sort of chalk rookies that has ever been. I think outside of N'Keal Harry and Josh Jacobs, you won't find a single prospect that people agree on. And you know what? Some people don't even agree on N'Keal Harry. Some people actually think that N'Keal Harry is like the third wide receiver in this class or not set up for success. So really, I would say the only chalk first two picks is Josh Jacobs, really.
Yeah, and I'm probably in that group where, look, when we can get to actionable advice on these rookies, I mean, we could get into the long, flowing, interesting conversations too. Actionable advice on the rookies, for Jacobs, you have to have the first pick. If you get him at the second pick, you're lucky. For Harry, you have to have a top three pick. And I'm in that some people group where I say, I'm going to look elsewhere for that top three pick. I'm going to trade down with somebody that wants Harry and take somebody that I might think has a better situation, specifically because I just don't see contested catches and touches. What does Harry do well? Contested catches and make hay after the catch. He's not going to create separation. He's not a timing-based receiver. He's not a receiver that is, you know, we think about Tom Brady and the Patriots offense and how the receivers have to think on their feet, option routes. When I was watching Harry at Arizona State, I didn't see a lot of that, but I saw a beast after the catch and a beast when the ball's in the air, and he'll have value to this offense, but he's another element and maybe not a truly primary element, even though they spent a first round pick on him. But that's my opinion. And the point is, if you like Harry, I have the third pick in a fantasy rookie draft starting today, and I'm looking to trade down. So even if you don't have that top three pick, someone at 2 or 3 might be willing to trade down. There's no excuse to not get your guys this year.
I'm actually big on trading down. I wrote my pick by pick strategy for if you had first, second, you know, all the way through 12. I wrote that yesterday. And what I realized is I think if you hold one of those first three picks, I actually think you probably gain a lot of value by trading back, because all my favorite prospects in this draft are between 10 and 18. I think if I had three picks in between 10 and 18, I'd leave with three guys who I feel confident not only in getting on the field and producing this year, but being guys who play for 6, 7, 8, 9 years.
Right. And I agree with you that, yeah, give me 13, 15, and 18 over number three, and I'll be very happy. And I, what's interesting is you can say that, and it'll be fun for the reveal when we're talking about this, Davis, because you can say that, and I can say that, and we might have three totally different guys.
Oh, I bet we do.
And the rookie drafts are going to accommodate that. So, you know, you're going to get a guy at 10. You know, I know that there's some good apps that are going out there now that are saying your percentage chance of getting a player to pick. I think this is excellent because you'll see your percentage chances of just about anybody outside of those guys that we're talking about and a few others that are you know, Miles Sanders you're going to need to spend a top five pick on probably. There's a few guys that are chalk, at least in terms of knowing the value, but otherwise you're going to get those guys. So it's fun, and what's really fun about it too, Davis, is that we have our evaluations of the players, and our evaluations of players are coming at it from a lot of different angles, all valid, and perhaps what, as my understanding of the stuff evolves, David, Davis. Sorry. What I think is it's almost like the 12 stories, that there are only 12 stories, you know, and there are only maybe 12 stories of how players succeed or fail. And we guess which one's going to apply to each player, but we don't really start to understand it until their career goes on. So maybe for one player, their lack of athleticism is what dooms them, or maybe for one player their incredible athleticism is what allows them to grow, but for another player who has incredible athleticism, because they land in an organization that isn't a good fit for them, they never tap into their potential, etc., etc., etc. So there's just the evaluation, and you can look at production, you can look at measurables, you can watch tape, but then there's the situation, there's the surroundings. And what I think is most important now, Davis, is what kind of offensive mind did they land with? Did they land with offensive mind that we've learned is rational, is innovative, uses players to their fullest, best abilities? Do they prefer to lean on certain players? Because I think the other trend, and this draft is going to illuminate this in some ways, is offenses having 8 or 10 players that touch the ball every single week. And it's going to take the DFS skill of evaluating a game plan and projecting how this rational offensive mind will attack this defense much, much more important. But as long as we have those rational offensive minds in good offenses, we know they can get the most out of those players. So some of these guys like Daryl Henderson or J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, even, who I wasn't that high on before the draft, if they land in good offenses with good puppet masters, chances are they're going to hit.
Yeah, no, that is the lesson of this draft for me, because some guys I didn't really like Mecole Hardman, he was outside. I didn't even rank him in my top 15 when I did my final rankings before the draft. He was not on my list. And now I have him at number 6 overall in rookie rankings because his skill set landed in the exact perfect offense. You know, his quarterback is 24 and he is going to be the speed guy. He's going to be the 9-route slant guy for at least the next 5 years for the Chiefs.
And look, my feelings on this have evolved a lot in the 13 years I've been doing the Bloom 100, 13 or 14. And at the beginning, because this is just the nature of your mentality when you start doing something like this and making your voices, it's about my evaluations of talent, and that's the determination. Talent creates opportunity. Talent can overcome situation. You know, talent determines all, and that's all pre-draft evaluation. And since then, I have learned a lot more to value situation. Sometimes the landing spot can be even more than half of their value, as you indicate. Hardman, the abstract commodity, just blends in with a lot of other players like that. Now, I was pretty high on Hardman. I had him 19th in the Bloom 100, which had some defensive players, so about 15th in offensive players and about 10th among wide receivers before the draft. I liked him a lot, and I even floated him out there a couple of times as a potential replacement for Hill when Hill's offseason troubles came up. But you're trusting the organization, right? Some of these rookie pick bets that you make when you make a pick, you're saying, I trust Kansas City to make the right pick for this hole and for Patrick Mahomes to get the most out of it and Andy Reid. I trust Pittsburgh to identify these 5'10", 180, 190-pound receivers who can run routes, who are quick, who are fast, who are mentally tough, and get the most out of them. Even if I didn't like Diontae Johnson, I like their track record with this kind of receiver.
I mean, how can you not like what the Steelers do? He is the exact prototype of a Steelers guy who they're going to take and they're going to say, all right, you're a decent prospect. I mean, he was another guy who was not in my top 15.
Sure. They all blended together. There was like 6 or 7 guys that were all very similar, and the team they landed on is what's separating them.
Yeah, because the Steelers just have this great track record of taking productive small school wide receivers and making them, you know, elite fantasy assets. People forget Juju Smith-Schuster was not an elite prospect. A lot of people had him outside of their top 5. I would guess some people probably had him outside of their top 10. He lands with the Steelers, and I mean, you know, they just know how to develop those guys. I do want to go back to the beginning, though, because I want to talk about Josh Jacobs, because you and I are going to come at this from a very different angle. We do both agree he's the first overall pick. I think you have to take Jacobs there, but I don't think Jacobs is a special talent. I sort of think of him in the same way that I thought about Fournette when Fournette went 4th overall, in the sense of I don't really see it with this guy, but I don't think you can ignore the fact that a team just took him in the first round. So like, what would your career projection for Jacobs be right now?
So to touch on some things you said, career projection, I think he can be a great well, I shouldn't say great, because I mean, great at this point is he's not going to be David Johnson or Todd Gurley or even Alvin Kamara or someone like that. Although we didn't see Kamara coming, but I think he's going to be a stalwart starter, a three down back, the kind of back who's going extinct now, the kind of back that can be on the field in every situation. And I think that Oakland nailed this pick. I'm running back in the first, whatever. This is a guy that they are going to get the best football out of. Alabama didn't wear him out like they did. Mark Ingram wasn't himself for like 3 years. Trent Richardson, I think, got used up. Eddie Lacy absolutely got used up at Alabama. Because Trent, and I know a lot of people were citing, well, Saban didn't lean on him. What does that mean? It means there are two other NFL-bound running backs. Another very good running back that's to New England, Damian Harris, who people are probably underrating in rookie drafts. Anyway, Jacobs, why he doesn't necessarily seem special when you watch him, and I get what you're saying. As a runner, and what I like about him as a runner, though, is he runs behind his pads. He's got power, and he plays with a mean streak. This dude plays with a mean streak in all facets of the game. You watch the Auburn game, and he puts four guys on their ass in like the first half, and only one of them is a play that he is a running back, like carrying the ball. He just likes to knock guys down as a blocker. He like if you catch him in the open field as a receiver, you're going to have a handful. What's special about him, Davis, is the alignment. The constellation of a powerful running back, and he's quick enough because he was their kick returner and a successful kick returner. He's quick enough with all the athletes they have there. He was their kick returner, and he maybe wouldn't have the long speed to break it for a touchdown, but he had the vision and the toughness and the quickness to break it for a 50 or 60 yard return. He would just caught from behind. So yeah, he doesn't have long speed. That makes him look not special. He's not, because he's a bigger power back, he's not sudden. He's not going to necessarily make guys miss and put highlight reel plays up. But he is a tremendous pass blocker and a receiver that some of the receivers in this class would be envious of. And he got his training from Julio Jones. He credits Julio Jones for his development as a receiver. There's a play on the Auburn tape where you see him run a go route out of the backfield, beat the linebacker. So he's got enough speed coming out of the backfield to beat a linebacker deep. And Tua throws the ball over the outside shoulder, which is not how the play is designed. He's not expecting that. He flips his hips, turns out a 180, doesn't break stride, and smoothly brings the ball in. And there are receivers in this class that can't do that in stride, turn and adjust to the ball going over the opposite shoulder. And then he breaks one tackle. He makes another guy take a bad angle and run into one of his teammates and scores a touchdown on the play. There are very few players in the NFL that can do this. But a guy who comes to mind, and Davis, I'm not saying he's as good as this guy, but an alignment of a power back, a back you can lean on late in the game, give 20-plus carries to, and a guy who can pass block, and a guy who can make things happen downfield as a receiver, run not just catch flares or screens, but run routes downfield effectively, make plays on the ball in the air like a wide receiver. Ezekiel Elliott, and he's not as good as Ezekiel Elliott, but Ezekiel Elliott's one of the few guys who offers this package at the running back position.
The comp that I actually thought of while watching him was I thought he was a little Ray Rice, where like
sure,
you always bigger. Feel pretty confident that he's going to get the 4 yards that you need, yeah. And he was like pretty smooth as a receiver. Like what I actually like about Jacobs and why I think he's going to be pretty good for fantasy is totally what you're saying. I think he's going to be a really good pass catcher. I don't think we'll ever see him make the sort of, you know, kind of super electric, get into the second level and you're not catching him type runs, but I do think he is probably going to be one of the four or five best pass catching running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, it's going to be it's fun. And look, it's a good fit, a good situation. You couldn't ask for a better situation in terms of opportunity, in terms of and now with Isaiah Crowell, they did sign Doug Martin. So I can't wait to watch Jacobs play. And he has a great personal story, too. He wrote it up on Players Tribune. You know that his hunger is never going to diminish. You know, this is a guy that went from being homeless to being in the NFL, and he understands how precious this opportunity is. And the Raiders were going with high character, team leader, locker room cohesiveness kind of guys. So that should give you a little more warm fuzzies. Even though Jacobs isn't the wattage of talent that physically that we usually get number one or even number three or even number five in rookie drafts usually, the situation and the fit in the situation, I think it's going to make you happy with what you get in the 1-1 in a down class.
So where are you at on Kyler Murray? Because in my rookie draft rankings, I have him pretty high because I really would rather have Kyler than David Montgomery or any of the wide receivers other than Harry. And that's normally not the way I feel about quarterbacks, but I really project Kyler to be the Konami code, that, you know, the add 500 yards rushing every year. I really do believe that he is like a special talent at the quarterback position, and he's got a great coach.
Yes, all those things. Well, he has a coach that's been smitten with him for 6 years.
Right.
This is not just him saying something in November. This is one of those destined in the stars. This is all somehow going to happen and come together. I'm getting chills just saying it. But it's fun because it's going to represent a quantum leap for the NFL. Elements of the air raid have been sprinkled in. Now we're going pure air raid, full air raid to see what happens. But like you said, Konami code, not just with the rushing ability, with an offense that, I mean, pass-heavy offense, and an offense that also isn't, think the early years of Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. Yeah, an offense that isn't going to let up. And even if you think the league will catch up, there will be a lag like there was with Chip Kelly, where, and this is a losing team also. So that's going to create better game scripts. Kyler Murray's going to get to let it all hang out. And sure, there's going to be a learning curve for him, and there's going to be rookie mistakes, and he trusts himself too much. But he is a special talent at quarterback. He's going into a system that's tailor-made for his skills and his abilities, including some of the players they drafted. And that's the other thing you have to like about this, Davis, is you look down Arizona's draft and there's full commitment. And you may agree or disagree with the plan, but we want to see teams having an internally consistent plan and following through on it. And they are. So it's the fantasy potential. Don't let your imagination, just like with Patrick Mahomes last year, don't let your imagination put an artificial limit on what this offense is going to be able to do early in terms of numbers, in terms of the size of the passing pie, in terms of what Kyler Murray can do, because defenses are not going to be prepared for him. And he puts stress on a defense, keeps the entire field in play as a runner and as a passer. You see the outfielder in him, right? When he gets out of the pocket, the whole field is reachable on the run. And you know, just a very
That's such a good point to make. There's not a throw he can't make while he's actually in motion, like while he's moving away and evading the rush. He can hit any spot within 45 yards of him.
That's stressful to prepare for because, Arizona's offensive line is trash. Who cares? You're not gonna come with your ears pinned back at this guy. That's asking for 60-yard touchdown passes. That's asking for him to leak out of the pocket and run for 20 or 25 yards. You're going to mush rush him. You want to keep him in the pocket, and you want to keep him thinking. You want to keep him thinking and not let him do, because he's still hesitant. You can tell that looking at defenses doesn't speak to him the way that, say, it does for Dwayne Haskins. But that doesn't matter because he has so many ways, so many tools in his toolbox to engage a defense, and he's going to grow a lot as a quarterback, I think, because he has a coach that loves him and is going to support him and support his style of play. So I agree with you. Now, look, I would probably take Hollywood Brown and Butler and Metcalf and Hardman over him just because of scarcity. But if we look back at Kyler Murray as a player a la Pat Mahomes last year, who ends up creating a 3-5 point advantage on average, and in some weeks gives you that 30, 35, 40 point week at quarterback, that advantage wins fantasy weeks just because it's quarterback position. And I don't even care who you have at quarterback. Even if you have Patrick Mahomes, if you're sitting there at 1-8, 1-9, 1-10, and Murray's there, take him. You can trade Mahomes.
That's the thing. Kyler is just like, I would say the Kyler hit probability and him being an asset on your team 5 years from now, it's so much higher than Marquise Brown, even though we both like Marquise Brown, right? But Marquise Brown's chances of busting are so much higher.
Sure, and just, the volatility and the range of outcomes. So you're absolutely right that if you like safe rookie picks, even though Kyler Murray, there's some things about him that are, he's testing this, the air raid, the 5'9 quarterback going number one, et cetera. He's a much safer pick than the wide receivers, because even Hardman, you're looking at scheme fit and a little bit of a projection there. With Metcalf's just going to help them establish the run because he's going to make them put two safeties high. It's all just so they can run 100 times more a year.
And he's going to block Metcalf, a willing run blocker. So I'm sure they looked at that and they were
so weak and strong. Yeah.
Yeah. So another really interesting thing is after Miles Sanders and David Montgomery and Josh Jacobs, I mean, you could probably argue for six running backs. Sure. You know, I think it's Daryl Henderson. I think Henderson is actually a special player. I actually had Henderson as my number one running back before the draft, and I had Jacobs at number two. But I think that the Rams, I think they're ready. I think they're ready to use a second running back. And when Gurley, you know, this arthritic knee, I think they're ready to turn the reins over to Henderson. It seems like they value him already more than John Kelly and Malcolm Brown.
Yeah. And I don't care if Sean McVay compares him to Lance Dunbar and says he's a change of pace. Like you said, he's a special player. There's nobody, I mean this, Davis, when I say this, there's nobody in the league right now that combines his ability to win collisions and have the acceleration and speed to break a running play the distance. There's nobody. He is a player who can create chunk plays out of bread and butter running plays. And we already see that the Rams offense can do that anyway. What do you do when you plug a player into some of these players that we watch? Plays we watch C.J. Anderson run, plays we watch Todd Gurley run, where you have someone with top-level acceleration and straight-line speed. It's going to be fun. Now, Gerald Everett is a little bit of a cautionary tale, because I'm sure they had a plan for Gerald Everett when they took him too, and well, we're still waiting. So it doesn't always follow through when they say, we've got a plan for this player. But he's so he's so much more dynamic and pops off the screen more than Gerald Everett did, even though maybe what Gerald Everett, in their mind, the league just gets enamored with these big pass-catching tight ends. I'm not sure why. We can talk about Noah Fant if you want. But Henderson is an electric talent. He's in an offense that is innovative and forward-looking and trying to make – and look, McVay knows. Last year, you're in this 11 personnel. You're running all these diverse things out of the same personnel set, some of the same formations, and keeping defenses off balance. You can't just go back to that this year and expect that to work. Defenses are going to catch up to that. What's your next move? Well, I think your next move this year is more two-back sets, and they said as much. Hopefully more Gerald Everett, more Tyler Higbee. Doing these things to now, you know, your move defenses, because this is what we're going to show you. So Daryl Henderson fits into that. And then you look at it like a James Conner situation. And I was pounding the table for people to take James Conner in the second and third round a few years ago, because if you just project it forward, Le'Veon Bell might not be a Steeler in a year or two because of the rocky relationship. And he might inherit the best running back situation in the league. Turn the page. Todd Gurley's arthritic knee. And he didn't look right. It's a mental thing as much as a physical thing now. I think his knee doesn't feel right to him. He's not getting any surgery this offseason or anything like that. When you saw his comments, he said, I'm feeling pretty good. I think he said the dreaded day-to-day. He said, I don't know how I'm going to feel 6 months from now. He does not sound like a player who's convinced that this was just a blip and his career is going to resume where we thought it was going into last year. And for them to move up, this is important, the Rams move up in the third round in a draft that they don't have a lot of resources to get Henderson, it's clearly indicates some concern, but we always have to remember it also indicates that they love the player as they should.
Yeah, they probably had a high grade on him. They probably didn't expect him to still be there. And, you know, the team knows that, look, we paid Gurley all this money. Our offense needs a pass-catching running back. You know, the offense was, it didn't seem like it was worse with Anderson in there because Anderson ran really well. But limiting what their running back could do in the passing game really, I think, did limit their offense both in the Saints game and in the Super Bowl. And I think that they know that.
Yeah, McVay is going to be forward-thinking, and he's not going to wait for the game to show him something that he's forgetting or missing. He's going to be anticipatory in the way that this team is managed. So I'm really excited about Daryl Henderson. So I think we probably do agree then, Davis, that Daryl Henderson is one of those guys. So you can almost think about it when you look at people's rookie rankings, and it's actionable to say, you know, if you have this pick, like if you have pick 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, we're probably going to tell you take Kyler Murray. Although we might have, I may say like Mecole Hardman's interesting, but if you have pick 12, 13, 14, 15, big circle around Henderson's name.
So I think I would take him in the first. I would take Henderson up to like 8 or 9. Yeah, but you might not have to. That is the thing. Right. Where are you at on Fant and Hockenson? Who do you have ranked higher for? Not for like NFL purposes. You know, sure. I think everyone agrees Hockenson is the better NFL player, but right. I actually have Fant ahead of Hawk for fantasy, and I feel pretty confident in that opinion, but it sounds like maybe you're not as in on Fant.
Either guy. Look, I have them 19th and 20th, and this includes, like, because it includes defense, Bosa, and the two linebackers ahead of him. So 17th, 15th, 16th. Look, these are pass. My rating on these guys are pass. I mean, Fant might be there in the mid-second, especially if you're in a tight end premium or you need a tight end, you might look at him. But I would actually say that Jay Sternberger, from a fantasy standpoint, projects just as well, if not better, than Fant.
I'm a big Sternberger guy, so I won't push back against that too much.
Yeah, well, I don't care. People are getting really hung up on draft position and draft position as some sort of career determiner, but situation and fit is just as important. So let me go through these guys and why I'm kind of lukewarm on them. With Hockenson, I think of Vernon Davis. I think of Zach Miller in Seattle. I think of Mercedes Lewis. How if an organizational philosophy is we're a power team, we're going to run the ball down your throat, then these guys, and Hockenson's such a great blocker. He has the most diverse skill set as a blocker I've seen from a tight end in time I've been evaluating these guys, like 12, 13, 14 years. He can handle a defensive end one-on-one as a run or a pass blocker. He can stalemate them as a pass blocker. He can move them as a run blocker. He can get outside the numbers to lead a wide receiver screen when he's lined up as an inline tight end. He can affect two players on one running play. He'll block someone and then find someone else at the second level and block them and spring long plays. He can start a play as a blocker and end it as a receiver. So give that blocker look at the snap and then leak out of the formation and now you're in trouble. He was very respected by defenses at Iowa. He often created the space for Noah Fant. Even though Fant is the superior athlete, Hockenson was the one that they were bracketing. Hockenson was the one that they weren't going to let beat them, even though he often did. So he's a tremendous player. But Detroit wants to run.
Yep. And that's why they took him. They took him because they knew this dude is going to be a third tackle for us, and he'll be a more than adequate pass catcher. That's totally right. Why they took him.
He's a move tight end. You know, he can do so much with him, and they're going to use him. They're going to use his versatility, but I'm afraid they're going to be more enamored with the blocking side of his versatility. And I don't look at the Detroit offense right now as fertile ground for passing talents to maximize their fantasy value. It's just
not. They hired Darryl Bevell. They have one elite superstar wide receiver who, you know, I think Galladay is good enough that Galladay is going to be great for fantasy even in those situations. But I think the long term prognosis for like Kerryon Johnson is probably not great just because that offense is just not going to produce a ton of points overall.
And I love Kerryon Johnson as a player, but they're insistent on bringing other backs in.
Yeah.
So I might be wrong. I don't know. I should look this up to see if Darryl Bevell was actually like the offensive coordinator when they made Zach Miller a nobody blocker in Seattle. But the point is,
I believe that is the case. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is that organizational fit and it, you know, things could change. Matt Patricia, Lions fans are like, please get Patricia fired. You know, and then they'll get somebody else. I don't know if Bevell was there actually 2011. Anyway, my point is this. I'm getting sidetracked. When I think of TJ Hockenson, the Detroit Lion, I don't think of a top five fantasy tight end. I think of somebody that we're going to say, oh, if they just didn't maroon him at the line of scrimmage so often as a blocker, but they're not going to do that, or I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And then with Fant, Davis, do you get the warm fuzzies when I say Joe Flacco and Drew Locke?
I don't get the warm fuzzies. What I do get the warm fuzzies about looking at that offense, I say, okay, they have their possession guy. They have Hamilton. They have the outside boundary guy that they need. They have Sutton. And then they have this perfect move tight end, you know, Joker in Fant. And then they have the thunder and lightning with Lindsey and Freeman. So I think if at any point, you know, any point over the next 4 years, if that organization finds their quarterback, I'm going to be super high on that young athletic offense. And I sort of think that the way that Elway has gone about things. So I think by like what, week 8, we're going to see Locke probably. It would be my guess. So let's say Locke sucks and he just, you know what, they 2 years from now they're like, look, Drew, it's not happening with you. We're moving on. And I think that there's a chance that, you know, that quarterback they draft 3 years from now ends up being the guy who unlocks all of this.
And if Elway gets fired, but there's no owner, so who's going to fire him?
Right, yeah.
I think, and if I'm going to go to your pro position here, Davis, and they got Mike Munchak, that's good. That's really, really good. When you get Mike Munchak, because the Steelers' offensive line was one of the worst in the league, and they got Munchak, and now it's one of the best. Mm-hmm. So that's good, too. But I just don't think of Joe Flacco and Drew Locke helping a player be near the top end of his range of outcomes. And Fant, as a player, athletically is breathtaking. But when it comes to good old bread and butter receiving skills, well, you know, he's adequate. He's not a run after catch guy. He's not going to break tackles. He's not going to be creative after the catch. He's not quite on the level of Evan Ingram as a pure fantasy tight end projection. He's a Jared Cook kind of player where you look at his physical abilities and you want to fall in love. But when it actually is about finishing the plays and being a heady player, a tough player, and so on, he doesn't always measure up. And that's the kind of player. What's sad here, Davis, is that going into the draft, Green Bay and the Patriots were both strongly linked to Fant. Okay.
I was rooting for him to go to Green Bay at 12, or, you know, they traded back. That was what I wanted. That's what I mocked. That I really wanted that to happen. Though I'm pretty happy that they got Sternberger, because I think
so. That's the thing, right? Yeah. Just turn to the page, because really Sternberger's the guy. So I have Fant and Hawkinson like 19 and 20. I don't know, or 20 and 19, but I have Sternberger like 24.
I have Sternberger 21.
Yeah, so we're on the same page here. Like Fant, Hawkinson, that's great. Use your first round pick and your early seconds on your favorite wide receiver from this class. If it's Hakeem Butler, if it's Andy Isabella, if it's AJ Brown, or whatever, whoever it is, I don't care. We're all different. Take your guy. Go with your Paris Campbell. Get your guy. And if you need a tight end, don't take Fant. Don't take Hawkinson where you have to. Wait until the mid late second, or maybe even the third, and take Sternberger.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on board. So we should transition to talking about some of those third round, fourth round guys that we're wanting. Sure. Who is the guy you're trying to leave the third round with?
Diontae Johnson will be there in the third round some drafts, all right?
You think? I think he's going to get really pushed up.
I hope so. I would love to see that just in terms of the hive mind becoming rational. But let me tell you, I'm getting him in the mid-second without resistance. And I'm looking at our Football Guys consensus. So Football Guys has 8 people ranking rookies so far, okay? And Diontae Johnson is 24th. Among offensive rookies. And some 3 people have him half of the 8 rankers have him outside of the top 30, 31 or 33. So it's not impossible. But look, if we're talking about players that I feel like are reliably going to be there outside of the top 25, because if there is something chalk about this year's class, it is that there's the top 25 or so, 20 to 25, that everybody's going to have them in different orders, but there's going to be the top 20, 20 to 5. And then there's going to be a free for all because of all these undrafted free agents, third day guys. So some of my favorite guys, because Justice Hill is not going to be there. Bryce Love, I think, would be a target in the third round. He could be better than Chris Thompson if his knee is okay. Some of the guys that I'm really higher on out of the more obscure names, I think you have to look at Ryquell Armstead just as a bet against Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, I'm big on that. That's a guy who I will want. I want him leaving these drafts because I don't think Fournette's any good.
Well, and I think that they're souring on him. So I have Armstead 26 right now. Nobody else on the staff has him higher than 33rd other than me. And then 4 people don't even have him in their top 40. So Armstead's a guy you can absolutely put that third. And here's what I like about Armstead. These third and fourth round picks and fifth round picks and these later picks in your rookie drafts, you want guys that by the end of their first camp or maybe halfway through the first season, you know whether you've got something or not. You want some early reveal. So with Armstead, you're going to know what the team is thinking of Leonard Fournette. He's the second best running back, so he's on a team that loves to run. He's going to get carries. We're going to see what we have with Armstead, who's a powerful back but also has some speed. Other guys that I like a lot more than others, Darwin Thompson. And this is one where when the usually sedate Matt Waldman uses 5 exclamation points and caps when a player gets drafted by a team, I'm going to pay attention. And this one's simple. Davis, we can make this one really simple, right? One of the best running back situations in the league for fantasy has no clear established starter right now. They drafted a running back. Take that running back late in your rookie draft, period. I don't care what you think about Darwin Thompson. I wasn't that high on Darwin Thompson going into the draft. I don't care. It's a share of a great situation.
I tend to agree. I do think that 2019 is going to be Damian Williams until he gets hurt. I think he'll get, That's 60% or so of the backfield work, and I think that work is going to be very productive. He's tied to the most efficient quarterback in the league, but I totally think that if he got hurt and Thompson or even undrafted free agent James Williams,
yes.
I think if those guys play well in his absence, I don't think it would be a situation where, say he's out for 4 weeks and then he comes back. I don't think that they would just give him the lead role back while the other guys were playing well, but I like. So Thompson is a guy I'm interested in for sort of future reasons. One of the guys who I think could actually end up starting this year that I haven't heard a ton of chatter about, Miles Gaskin. Because yeah. that team does not like Kenyon Drake. I do actually do think they sort of like Kalen Ballage, but Gaskin had four straight 1,000-yard seasons in college, caught the ball, you know, did everything that a starting running back was asked to do. I think that should be a place where people have the, you know, the red check mark. They're trying to leave every draft with that guy because he landed in maybe the most ideal situation to get work right away.
And that's key for running backs, too. And there was a guy, he went by the football guy's draft, the message board handle, Drug Runner. And he just said, always take running backs in rookie drafts over wide receivers. And this was back when we said wide receivers take 3 years to develop, so you can't judge them until the third year. And that's changed. So it's not necessarily true. But one of the things I loved about this idea is with running backs, especially if you're lining them up, like you said, with situations with immediate opportunity, again, you're going to know really early. And then you just swap to the next one, right? Like if the reports out of camp are that Miles Gaskin isn't impressing in rookie minicamp and OTAs, then you just move to the next guy who is. And there's a lot of them in this year's class. There's a lot of good undrafted running backs and wide receivers. And then maybe, you know, you pivot to the Phillip Lindsay. So you take Miles Gaskin, and as long as Miles Gaskin is creating positive buzz, he holds that spot. But if he doesn't, then you pivot to, you know, L.J. Scott in Baltimore, or you pivot to James Williams, like you mentioned, or you pivot to Divine Ozigbo, or somebody that we aren't even going to talk about now, but by August, they're going to be creating buzz because you're going to see who's going to get opportunity quickly, who the coaches are into. And I love that you put the spotlight on Miami, because one of the things we should be very tuned into with our rookie picks and as we are managing that part of our bench, our futures, is the new regimes and learning what they think about the players. And you're right. I can't say for sure what Chad O'Shea is going to think of Kenyon Drake. I'm very interested to see what he does as a McDaniels disciple. He's been cross-trained many layers over, so he's ready to set up a New England style offense. He's got Josh Rosen, who New England appreciated his intelligence as a quarterback, so this is all good. I don't know what they think of Kalen Ballage. I do know that they spent a draft pick on Miles Gaskin, another guy, while we're on this subject, I want to draw some attention to in Miami, because everything's up for grabs in Miami. I mean, even if you play in IDP leagues, a guy like Terrell Hanks, a linebacker who was undrafted, because everything's up for grabs, right? New regime, Brian Flores.
Yeah, they don't care. They only want the best players to succeed. Right. They have no loyalty to anybody.
Right. So Preston Williams. Preston Williams is a guy that had character issues and had a bad workout. But if you watch him play at Colorado State, a Colorado State team, by the way, that has given us Michael Gallup, has given us Rashard Higgins, and another player I think that Minnesota drafted this year, Johnson. So this is, and he was balling out at Colorado State, making those kinds of plays, those alpha outside receiver plays that we drool over in fantasy. And he is someone I'm trying to get in every draft in the fourth round. And again, if he gets off on the wrong foot, he's in the doghouse. I mean, you cut him for the other undrafted free agent who's in the same thing at wide receiver, right? We can talk about undrafted wide receivers in this year's class. Some of these guys, like Emmanuel Hall, second or third round talent going to Chicago, Penny Hart in Indy, or Ashton Doolin in Indy. The Chiefs, because we love this situation, and they have a thin depth chart at wide receiver now. Cody Thompson is there. Jamal Custis is there. You're going to monitor these guys, and as soon as you start to hear that buzz, and I'm going to use this moment to make a PSA that people that listen to my show are sick of hearing this. Rookie minicamps matter. OTAs matter.
Definitely.
Adam Thielen comes to Minnesota's rookie minicamp as a tryout player, and the reports from observers say, this tryout guy is beating our first-round pick, Xavier Rhodes, in rookie minicamp. That means something. They signed him to a contract. The rest is history. So when we see these rookies in rookie minicamp and OTAs, and you hear that buzz, and Phillip Lindsay was creating buzz immediately, and they went and got Juwan Winfrey, by the way, from Colorado. Denver's like, think they're going to hit gold twice with these Colorado guys. Anyway, my point is, whatever we think now, we've done all this preparation, we've marinated on this when we see where these players land. Listen, instead of staying rigid with your evaluations and your rankings, because we're going to start getting actionable information right away.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I of course, we can't get through the show without asking you, Daniel Jones. What are we doing with Daniel Jones? What is Daniel Jones going to be? Is New York fantasy Siberia now?
Yeah, right. Well, look, for fantasy, unfortunately, unless you're in super flex leagues, play super flex two quarterback folks. Haskins, Jones, Locke, whatever. It's all basically like you're not drafting another quarterback. You take Kyler Murray in the first, or if he falls to the early second, good on you. And you're not really looking at quarterback because it's just not worth it. I mean, Haskins is not going to anything as a runner. It's going to be a little while before watching this offense really develops to his strengths. Locke, that's other. Daniel Jones. Matt Waldman put it really well on our show about a month ago. He said, Daniel Jones appeals to old school NFL quarterback scouting. And so you knew who was going to take him. It's, well, he's so coachable. He's so smart. He's a humble leader. No, the best swag is no swag or something like that. I mean, it's perfect. But he's athletic, but you don't always see that athleticism. So Kyler Murray's athletic, and you see it allow him to negotiate the pocket like a boxer and leak out the back and create these great throws. Daniel Jones' athleticism doesn't create plays. He's tough. He'll look down the barrel and take a hit to make a throw. I'm sure that he is a yes sir, no sir. The coaches are confident that he's going to execute the game plan like Alex Smith, you know? He's going to execute the game plan down to a T, which for some coaches, that's like catnip. But some of the excuses you're hearing, what was it? Tom Pelissero, who's fantastic, by the way. Tom Pelissero is awesome, you know, because he's quoting someone saying, like, these are future cardiologists that he was throwing to at Duke. Well, what about who Lamar Jackson was throwing to at Louisville? If we're going to start saying, well, you're going to see the real quarterback when he's playing with better talent around him, because you're, as a franchise quarterback, a pick six quarterback, that was actually like Freudian. I don't mean that he's going to throw pick sixes, but maybe there's the truth coming out. You have to get a guy that elevates his teammates. And if you're making excuses for him before he's even in your building, then something's off.
You just had to watch him at the Senior Bowl and you would have fallen in love.
In the game, because everybody at the practices said he wasn't good at the practices at all. It was the game. And they have taken the last three Senior Bowl MVPs at quarterback. Okay.
That's an amazing Gettlemanism. That is like just a clear sign your organization doesn't know how to value things.
Right, right. Yep, Gettleman is, let's just say, without getting into, see, because you and I could easily devolve into something, but I'm sure you're much bolder than I am about this, I think, with Gettleman is perfect for our times. Gettleman, as a high-ranking member of the Giants, could also be high-ranking in other parts of our American society right now with his mentality, how he goes about his business.
Very true. All right, Sig. Thank you very much for the time. Tell people where to find everything.
Yeah, sure. Oh, at footballguys.com. I'm all football guys all the time. At Sigmund Bloom or at the Audible, and we love this stuff. We can't get enough of it. You know, we do 8 shows a week. I got to get you back on the couch. It's been too long, man. It's so great to talk to you, and not just on the couch, but to catch up and see, because at some point we're going to flip the switch and unzip our heads and show everybody that this was really just a ruse, a misdirection for the real plan that will be revealed at a later date. Right, Davis?
My man. Thank you so much for joining the show.